Welcome back to, I would say, my proudest moment as a podcaster. I'm Jay Black. I'm joined by Vin Nardiello. This is the Hungry Trolls podcast.
Oh, Jay.
And Vin, do you know why I'm excited and proud right now?
I'm not sure why.
Because we have sponsorship, Vinny.
Yeah, that's right. We do.
This is the first ever Hungry Trolls podcast that I can say Hungry Trolls, brought to you by Audible. Oh, feels so good to say.
I was hoping it was going to be a Lucky Strike cigarette.
Yeah. Whenever I'm out, as a doctor, I can tell you that Lucky Strike cigarette has the tobacco kids need.
Well, you don't realize, right next to me now, there's a woman dressed as a giant book on tape, tap dancing.
Well, that's that has nothing to do with Audible. That's just your particular weird fetish. So yeah, this is the Hungry Trolls podcast brought to you by Audible. We're going to do an Audible commercial later on, but I wanted to make a part of the show because I can say for a fact that Audible is one of the few products. Now, I'm going to say this. I would have accepted sponsorship from anybody. If Hugo Chavez wanted me to just turn this into an hour-long declaration of his principles, I would do it in an instant. I have absolutely no integrity when it comes to money, and especially when it comes to money for entertainment. You know, speaking of that, just real fast, I don't know if you saw, like, I think it was Gaddafi, when he was ousted from power, they found out about all the stars that performed for Gaddafi for like $1 million a pop.
Oh yeah.
And people were embarrassed by it. And I would say I would not be embarrassed in the least.
You've probably done worse. I would bet there has to be a chance. You know those like fundraising shows that we used to always do out like in like central Pennsylvania?
Sure, yeah.
Some of them had to be for the Klan, right?
Oh, I didn't ask. Let me tell you this much. If I was doing comedy for Gaddafi at $1 million a pop and he beheaded someone in the room, wouldn't even bring it up. I just would go, you know what? That guy probably deserved it. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to collect my check, get on a private plane back to La La Land. So, yeah. So I have zero integrity when it comes to money. But I will say that Audible, for real, for realsies, is a service that I've subscribed to out of my own pocket for the last 3 years. So, and I'm not just a gold account member. That's not enough for me. I'm a platinum member, Vinny.
Now, what does that get you? You get filleted while listening to...
That's right. I could stop at any one of the thousands of Audible filleting houses that dot up and down the tri-state area. No, it gets me... gold account gets you one book a month. Platinum account gets you two free books a month. And I was spending so much money on books after my credit was used up that I just said, you know what? I'm going to platinum. And the only thing I'm mad at is that there isn't one beyond platinum.
I've been also... they should give you some kind of card, like a platinum Audible card, right?
Oh, yeah. No, because nothing will get you laid harder than the 21st century equivalent of a library card. Look at this, baby. I listen to my books double speed. How about a rim job?
I noticed I called it a book on tape, and I know that's an old term. It's just audio book now, right?
Yeah, you just download it. You can put it into I put it into the iPhone because I'm a young hipster. You have a Android phone because you're an old fuddy duddy.
I'm very poor,
and
I don't make the kind of money you make, Jay.
No, very few are in the rarefied air as a comedian like me who performed in a basement tonight.
Were you that Chris Kosher show?
No, I was up in a place called Emouse, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those gigs, Vin. I showed up and I had done it like 2 years ago. And it was, you know, you do those gigs and you go in your head like, well, I'm never doing that shithole again. And then 2 years roll by and you're in the same shithole.
Yeah, no.
And you just sort of have to sit in your car for an hour and a half afterwards going, what have I done? But I actually, I enjoy the show very much. It's a cool little room. And it was one of those deals where the place was packed with people who came specifically to see me.
How'd that happen?
I've played that section of the country a lot. And I had people who've seen me like 4 or 5 times now. And they came up to me before the show. Like, I sold tickets to this thing. like literally 30 or 40 people came just to see me, and they had just seen me like 2 months ago.
Hey, Jay, let's just pretend it's the power of the podcast that did it.
No, it had nothing to do with the podcast.
Jay, we have to look good for the sponsors.
Had nothing to do with that. In fact, they came up to me after the show and said, you know what? I like you so much, I'm never buying an audiobook ever.
I'm just going to buy your recording.
Yeah. But here's the thing, though, Vin, and I don't know if you've ever had this happen. People came to see me, which was wonderful, but they had just seen me 2 months ago, which is not wonderful.
And you're doing the exact same shit that you did, not just 2 months ago, but 10 years.
Well, there are some perennials, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where it's like, I figure maybe 10 to 15 minutes churn over the course of a year.
Yeah.
Over the course of 2 months, 2 minutes change. Mm-hmm. And you just feel like you're doing the magic show again, but they're on the other side now of the stage so they can see all the strings. It's like, hey, wait a second. He didn't just come up with that off the top of his head.
Well, I mean, I accept people who do the same, jokes over. I do too.
Yeah.
You work with comics that do the exact same screwed up jokes. Like they'll flub the same lines on purpose.
No, I've never. I mean, I've seen it, but not recently. No.
Yeah, I've worked with comics that'll do that. And that really has to destroy the illusion for an audience member.
Well, I think the worst for me is when someone has an obvious dated reference. And they have to jam it in somehow.
Where they'll pretend. Notice they wrote something when the movie came out. Yeah. And they had to pretend it was on TV the other night.
Yeah. Hey, it was on TV the other night. UHF with Weird Al Yankovic. And you're like, yeah, no, I don't think that's been on in 20 years, my friend. But so it was a good night for me that way, in the fact that all sorts of fans came out. Bad night because I was in a basement.
Well, I'm having a bad night right now. I'm watching the Yankee game, so I'm only really half paying attention to you.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
The Yankees just lost.
They already started as a loser, Vin, by being in New York City. And by the way, if you don't want to pay attention, that's fine. I could just do a monologue.
No, the game's over. You got me now. You got 100% Vinny right now.
Yeah.
I stayed up for this. It's very late right now.
Well, that's the thing. This is one of the few podcasts that we've ever done where we've stayed up late, not because my wife has told me that we can't do the podcast till late, but because I was actually out doing something. I was out performing.
Well, I was up watching this game. All these games are very late. I have to imagine that much like your wife not knowing about the podcast, Bud Selig's wife not knowing about the playoffs. And they have to schedule the games to start so late.
Yeah, Bud Selig, very annoyed wife. I wanted to get that out of the way up at the front of the show, which is that, and I know that we were a little bit all over the place, but to bring it back, we have a sponsor now. It is actually, I feel like Leo Laporte.
I like it because it's like a legitimate company.
Yeah.
It's like a respectable company. You hear some of these sponsors, especially for like some of the like podcasts or Salivio, and it's always like ball freshener.
Yeah. Or a third rate dildo company.
Yeah, or dating services that are really just thinly disguised escort ads.
Yeah. Are you tired of wondering if the girl will sleep with you at the end of the night? We'll use this dating service where all you have to do is put $1,000 on the table, no questions asked, and she will blow you. So, yeah, it's a legitimate service. I'm super excited about it. We'll do an actual commercial at the end of the show. And I will say this. I like that I'm teasing a commercial. Stick around. All you have to do is stick through the content, ladies and gentlemen.
I didn't see it. Did you write copy?
No, there's no copy. We're gonna wing this, baby.
Oh, but what if the people audible? What if they get mad about our lack of professionalism?
I'll say this: if they're sponsoring based on the first 7 episodes, they should be mad at nothing we do. I believe
I like to think that the audible people market researched us.
Yeah, I like to think that the Audible people market researched us by getting super high.
It turns out people who love audiobooks also love references to late 90s pornography and professional wrestling from the 80s.
Yeah, hey, Chasey Lane, everybody.
You know, I was about to pull up the Chase Elaine too.
Yeah,
she was my favorite at the time.
Yeah, you don't want to go Jenna Jameson. That shows a lack of hipster cred. You got to.
I honestly remember a heated argument about who was hotter, Chase Elaine or Jenna Jameson.
Well, you see, Jenna Jameson broke the hot barrier, and she actually, you know, you want to talk about a porn pioneer? It is Jenna Jameson. Jenna Jameson was the first legitimately beautiful porn star. But
for a brief time, yeah.
Well, yeah. Oh, you know, the meth and the banging do a lot to you know, dig out that hole. But for the time, there was, I mean, if you remember porn stars pre Jenna Jameson, it mm-hmm. wasn't beauty that was the driving force. It was essentially just willingness to bang on camera.
Oh, it actually took them until at least the early 90s to figure out to give the girls large breasts.
No, they had fake boobs in the 80s.
Did they? I seem to remember there being a lot of, like, you know, like flat-chested women.
No, here's the thing. It wasn't that there was flat-chested women or fake boobs versus not fake boobs. It was that in the 70s and 80s, it was such a maligned industry that you couldn't get, like, if you were a high-end looking broad, you're not going to get in a porno. You know, you got to be somebody that's already sort of hit rock bottom and is willing to do it. What Jenna Jameson did was she flipped it. She said, you know what? I'm going to do porno, then hit rock bottom. And that's basically been the design ever since. So, you know what? She should have her own stamp. She should have her own tramp stamp.
I'm pushing like the set of four of late 90s porn stars.
Yeah. I do Chase Elaine. You got to do Jenna Jameson. Who was the Chinese one? Not Chinese, the Asian one.
Oh, what is her name? I know who you mean. She wound up marrying the guy from Biohazard.
Yeah. Well, I'll think of her in a second. And I think you got to do one dude. You got to go
Peter North.
Yeah. So there's actually I owned a video cassette of Jenna Loves Rocco.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically, I guess she was dating the other porn star, so it was just like her banging him a lot.
Yeah.
And the other day my daughter wanted a Sesame Street episode. So I went through and I found a Sesame Street episodes, and I swear to God, there's one from last season, and it's on Netflix. It's Abby Loves Rocco. It's Abby Kadabby loves a rock that she named Rocco. But I was watching it, and I had to think that there's some employee of the Children's Television Workshop that is my age that owned Jenna Loves Rocco. And slyly put that reference in for all the fathers in the audience. Don't you think?
Yeah, I like to think that all the Sesame Street titles are actually thinly disguised porn satire.
Well, that's the thing.
What, I mean, One Night in Grover.
Behind the grouchy door. But yeah, so that's... I don't know where we got onto porno. Oh, yeah, Audible loves porno.
Yeah. Well, there goes the sponsor, huh?
All right, let's get to... Well, actually, that is a pretty good segue into what I wanted to talk about today. Obviously, when I said Audible loves porno, and they do have an erotica section. So if you're interested in that, you could download erotica, although I think that'd be weird if you were paying a toll.
Well, I am just to... I'd like to hear who's reading, if they bring any, like, names.
All right, you cut out on that one, Vin. You were looking into what? I'm sorry?
I would like to see who's like the narrator on the erotica.
It always reminds me of the old Saturday Night Live bit where it was Madonna's sex book.
Read by Charlton Heston.
Charlton Heston read it, but Danny DeVito described all the dirty parts. Yeah, you got to see this broad here. She's squatting over a mirror and all her lady parts are out. So, but when I said Audible loves pornography, I think it was very obvious that it was said in jest. It was what we call irony, where you say one thing yet mean another. And now I'm not going to mention where you work, but you do have a day job. Yes. And you were telling me, it was interesting, you sent me an Onion article. And I had already read the Onion article, and I thought of you when I read it because it's so right up our alley as to what we find funny. But I want you to take over and tell me what happened.
All right. So the Onion article was, I can't remember the title of it. It's escaped me at the moment.
It's ask a sophomore creative writing major.
No, ask an elderly black woman.
Right.
As written by a sophomore creative writing major.
Right. So this is the idea is this is part of the Onion series where it's advice columns as written by sometimes inanimate objects or somebody that has their own agenda. But in this case, it's an old black woman as described by a creative writing major, which is so wonderful because we were both English majors and dealt with those types all the time.
Oh, all right. So and the way they describe the elderly black woman, basically it's like one of the characters from The Help.
Right.
You know, lots of talk about like the calloused black hands and her son Remus, who's in jail, and how she loves sticking food because it's food that sticks to your ribs.
Right.
And it's time to go hear the preacher man preach.
Right. And essentially, the whole idea here is that it's exposing the sort of casual racism that happens when well-to-do white people try to write black characters. They always tend to be sort of supernaturally spoken down to.
Man, you know, a joke becomes a lot less funny when we describe it this thoroughly.
Well, you see, but here's the thing. I think it's important that it is described so that the next part of the story makes sense.
So I read this article. And I was just laughing to my like out loud.
Right.
So I immediately printed it up and then started showing people at work.
Right. Now it's starting to sound like when Michael Scott did Chris Rock's black person versus the N-word routine in the first season of The Office.
No, hold on. I didn't post it on a bulletin board or anything like this. I showed people who I thought would, you know, be like-minded.
Right. And you work at a place that has college-educated people.
Yeah.
Right? This is not like you... You don't work...
No, I don't work at like a refinery.
Right. You're not at a brewery.
No.
You know, you're not the assistant janitorial staff. I couldn't imagine you as part of the head janitorial staff.
I you know, when I was in high school, I did work in summer school as a janitor. That was my summer job.
Forever enshrined there as stories of the creepy janitor that was always trying to have sex with the summer school students.
Well, in all fairness, I was in a school and I was school aged myself.
What's going on?
So it's true because I was also 16.
Yeah. You know what? I get all the free sawdust puke I want.
I just actually memorized the speech from the Breakfast Club that the janitor gives to impress the girls.
Oh, I thought you were going to give the speech from Rudy.
That or I would also go into classrooms and do math on the board that nobody else could solve.
3 + 7.
It was summer school, so yeah. That's true. Yeah,
I did that in my head. Sophomore math. I'm the king.
All right, so I show people this article. It ranged from people laughing, but more to get me to leave,
right,
than anything else, to people who thought I was like printing up racist jokes myself.
Right.
I would guess other reactions were people who just thought it was like a serious thing went, oh, that's terrible. And then like I turned into like I was just doing what you were doing. I was describing the joke to people. And just making myself more and more looking like, you know, like a horrible racist as it went on. Like James Earl Ray just walked into the workplace.
Right. So, okay, this is why I wanted to bring it up. Because this happens so often. And the problem is that when you bring up something like this, there is nothing racial about that except to make fun of white people who think they understand black culture. That's it. But the problem is, whenever you extract what was being satired and then you talk about it sort of out of context, you always sound terrible. You know, it's like, you know, the Daniel Tosh rape thing that happened a while ago. You know, all you have to do is say, oh, Daniel Tosh was joking about rape. And then immediately he's the bad guy. And there's no possibility that you can just extradite yourself from the situation by going, no, let me explain how I was joking about rape.
Well, you actually, a couple weeks ago, you did a college, and you accused me of doing rape jokes.
Well, I only accused you of it because you told two rape jokes.
I did not.
Well, here's the thing.
I told jokes with the word rape is in the joke.
And that's what I was trying to make the point of. It doesn't matter the context, because when you're dealing with people that don't have a sense of irony, they will always just remember what the word was and not the meaning of the word.
Well, me, I'm an artist, so.
Well, that's the thing. And
I don't bow to the man like you do, Jay.
Well, I wasn't bowing to the man. It was making the point of, I want to get my check.
It may not pay us, true.
Yeah. But that's the thing that...
You do have the rape jar. I meant to make a rape joke. You put money back into it.
But it frustrates me because, those people, and I think it's... I'd like to think it's a minority, but I do think it's...
By the way, can I just also make it clear that the people I was showing to at work, I wasn't going around showing it to black people.
Right.
All right. I thought I'd just throw that in there, too.
Well, had you shown it to black people, what does it matter?
Well, I know. I don't want anybody to think I'm being like racially like of course.
Right. But you know what though? The fact that you felt the need to say that, I think is part of the illustration of the bigger problem, which is, once you start down the path of, hey, I did this thing, and people go, well, why did you do that? What point were you trying to make? And you're just going, no, it was just funny. Well, why did you think it was funny? Well, because this is how, white people who are trying to be sensitive to the way black people... Oh, so white people shouldn't be sensitive? No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying... and then you just sort of swirl down the drain. And I hate the fact that we live in a world where the person who's doing the accusation has all the power. It should be the other way around. It's like, unless Vinny is actually doing racist things... unless Vinny is leading the charge to desegregate the school, or he's leading the charge to make sure that no women are hired at the law firm.
Well, you should have heard the voice I did while reading the story.
Oh, that could have been the problem. Yeah. And the fact that you were wearing overalls and a straw hat. I said, let me tell you a story, boys. That's what drives me up a wall, is that the power is all in the hands of the people who are offended.
Well, you often get accused of being a misogynist.
Well, that's simply because I hate women.
Right? That doesn't need to be the criticism that comes up from your act a lot, right?
Right, yes.
Am I making things uncomfortable here by saying this?
Not at all.
I've more than once heard you, defending yourself.
Well,
After a show, to the point where sometimes even the person is done accusing. And you're basically pulling them around defending yourself.
No. I'll tell you, you are misinterpreting what I do now. What I do is I feel like people get, they take an impression and then they just want to throw their impression out at you. They want their emotion to be more important than the actual facts of the situation, because they have been raised in a world where their emotion is the most important thing possible. So something happened along the way that made them offended. They don't remember exactly what it is, but now they got this little niggling thing in their head, like, oh, I'm offended. So they feel the need to come up to me after the show and go, I'm a little offended at what you said. So you know what? I don't let them get off the hook. You're not allowed to just say that. You got to have some rational basis for telling me what I said that was offensive. So my question is always, well, what was it? I don't know. It's just your overall impression. No. Can't say that. You got to tell me what it was. What part of my act was insensitive? And when they start bringing it up, I just counter that. No, that's irony. Did you honestly think I was making the point that X, Y, and Z? And they always fall apart and they just want to walk away, because I'm not going to let them just throw their little spear of, I was upset, and then just take it. Then they just want to walk away. No, fuck you. You got to stay and tell me what was wrong.
Well, the problem is you're using the exact same defense as people who are actual racists, though, I think.
No, not a racist.
I have seen comics who have done material that is legitimately misogynistic,
sure,
legitimately homophobic, legitimately racist, and they have the exact same argument as you.
No, here's the difference. If you were to say to one of those comics what is racially insensitive, and I know exactly the comic you're talking about.
Comics, many.
Yeah. I don't think that they would be able to mount a defense. You find me one part of my act that's misogynistic, and I'll stop doing it. But there's no part of my act that's misogynistic.
I'm trying to think. You know what? You do kind of have like the bitchy woman voice that you do.
How is that misogynistic?
You're like, oh, man. You do the bitchy woman voice.
So you're saying, you're extrapolating out. Tell me, when do I do that voice? I just did it now, but I don't think in my act I do that voice.
I would say a good 60% of your act is that bitchy woman voice.
I'll be honest with you, Vin. I don't think I do that voice in my act.
No, I know. I'm just fucking with you now.
But that's the thing. I feel like every single bit of my act is thought out. And if you were to sit down and actually try to tell me what was wrong with one joke or another, I feel like I could mount the defense. And honestly, if I couldn't mount a defense, I'd take it out. I've taken out jokes that when I thought about it, I went, oh, you know what? That could be offensive to one group or another. I used to do a joke about having a gay hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because my hand sort of, you know, gets a little effeminate when I talk.
A little hand jobby on people.
Yeah, exactly. And I took that out unbidden. Because I was sitting about it and I was thinking about it and I was like, you know what? What am I implying about saying that I don't have a, you know, I'm not gay, but my hand is?
Now here's a question. Did you take it out because you worried that, you know, I'm being insensitive, or did you take it out because, hey, gay people might be booking me and I don't want to lose bookings?
No, I took it out because I do a lot of colleges, and I actually sat and thought to myself, if I were in college and I were gay, what would be the takeaway from that bit? Mm-hmm. And the only takeaway is, because whenever you do a gay panic joke, is the panic part of it is it must be bad to be gay.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's offensive about a gay panic joke.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as, you know, I saw some celebrity, and I forget who it was, that there's always been gay rumors about, and somebody brought it up to him on a talk show. And they said, you know, are you offended at the rumors that people think you're gay? And he was like, why would I be offended at something that is not offensive?
All right.
That kind of stuck with me. You know, it's like being upset that people think that your hair is a different color than it is. You're born
a long way from. Do you remember when Magic Johnson, right after he got diagnosed with AIDS, he went on Arsenio?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the whole thrust of it was, no, and man.
First question, they say, now, Magic, are you gay? He says no. The audience gives him a standing ovation.
Well, to be fair, on the Arsenio Hall show, they would give a standing ovation to anybody at any time.
That's true.
37 standing ovations a show. But no, I took that out of my own impetus, because I didn't want people to think I was downing gay people. That's not to say that there's nothing offensive in my act, because people are going to get offended at anything. But what drives me nuts is, why should you being offended, why do you feel the need to tell me that you're offended? What is your goal in doing that? If your goal is to get me to change my act, well, then you're going to have to sit down and talk to me about it. But if your goal is just to kind of hit and run, you can go fuck yourself. And I think that should be true of everybody.
I don't think I've ever actually been offended by anything in my life. I can honestly say that. Like, I think I've heard things where I go, oh, that's you know, not very funny.
Right.
I think I've heard things where I said, oh, that's, you know, like you said, like that actually is legitimately racist or, you know, homophobic, whatever. But I don't think I've ever been that upset.
I'm
offended by that.
I can tell you one time that I was offended for real. And this is a recent thing. I was driving and listening to Howard Stern, and Howard had a kid on who had a speech impediment.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire reason that the kid with the speech impediment was on was because on the radio, it's fun to make fun of somebody with.
Was his name actually Speech Impediment Man? Because he has Speech Impediment Man on the show.
You know, I don't think it was anybody that was a regular. It was just somebody who was calling in, and Howard kept him on the phone because he sounded funny, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't know how aware the person calling in knew that, you know, the only reason I'm on the show is because I sound goofy, but my son has a pretty severe speech impediment. And for the first time ever in my life, because I'm just like you, I never get offended at anything. But here I am, like, Howard is pretty much making this person look foolish. And he's complicit in it. But again, I don't know how complicit he is. He might not be all there. And I just thought of my son, you know, 20 years from now, if he has any kind of, you know, urge to be funny or on the radio or on TV like his dad, you know, calling the robot equivalent of Howard Stern in 20 years, Robo Stern, and being made fun of for
I think he already kind of is Robo Stern if you listen to the
yeah,
show.
it's 90% drops now from old episodes. You know, that could be my son, and I got really sad for a second. And I don't know if this is how people who are offended feel, but I said, you know what? I don't want to hear this. I turned the channel and I waited for it to be over and then I turned it back, which I think is the reasonable response.
Is that the same as being offended? I mean, that seems more like, oh, I didn't like that. Like, you know, it didn't upset you that much. Like, it was kind of like, oh, this is not good. And then.
Well, no, but here's the thing. It wasn't like I was judging it based on the merits of whether or not it was funny, which is how I judge just about everything else in my life. I was judging it based on the fact that personally, this upset me. And it made me sad for my son, and it made me sad for myself, and it made me sad for the person who was calling Howard Stern.
Well,
So.
you listened to Howard Stern for years. They've had various the retards on. They've had stroke victims on.
Sure.
They've had elephant boys and Baba Booies.
Right.
And you've never been offended before. Why now? I mean, is it just because it's personal and
Yes.
it hits home?
That's
Like,
exactly.
does this change how you listen to the show? Can you hear one of the retards on?
Now when they bring on the people with the speech impediments, I can't listen. Yeah.
By the way, I want to make clear that I wasn't saying the retards. They call them the retards.
That's right. Yeah, no,
The
it's
show. I'm being factual here.
Right. It's almost like the Dakotas.
Yeah.
North South Dakota, it's North retard, South retard. Yeah, so that's I get offended, you know, in the sense that you know, I don't, you know, I say it's not right to make fun of somebody who can't change the way they talk. They want to have the attention and they can't help it. But I understand that Howard doesn't have that in his life. And doesn't understand what it's like to, you know, deal with a kid who's, you know, going to speech therapy 3 times a week to try to just get to be understood. And, you know, it's funny for 99% of the people, and it's not funny for 1% of the people. So my sense of being offended is, oh, gee, I don't like that. I find that personally distasteful. Therefore, I'm not going to listen to it. And I
You're
think
not going to
that's
write a letter.
well, that's the thing. I don't understand why people feel that personal feeling means
Has to
that
be
they get
shared,
the,
yeah.
yeah, it has to be shared in any way. Like, I don't get that. It makes me think that what they're doing is based in narcissism and not based in trying to make the world any better. Because what's the outcome that they expect? What's the outcome of the people that got offended at you reading that Onion article? All they want to do is make you feel bad.
I would think that they just here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking they're just too stupid to understand, and I'm the smartest guy around.
That's right, hipster Vinny.
Yeah.
That's because all the bands you listen to, no one's heard of. In fact, you
Mainly
form
because
bands.
they're from the 1950s, and most people, you know.
Yeah, all Vinny does is listen to his wax acetates. Hey, man, give me one of those Edison cylinders. All right. I don't know. How long have we been on for? It feels like forever. Yeah, well,
Over a
30
half hour.
minutes. Yeah, right about a half hour. That's good enough for these people. Oh, we got to do our Audible pick.
Yeah, I've been waiting on that.
All right. So here's what you do. If you've been listening this far, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go to www.audible.com, or you can just go through clickclack.com. When you get to the website, you put in this offer code. You put in clickclack, CLIQUECLACK. Click clack. CLIQUECLACK. Guess what I'm going to get you? I'm going to get you a free audio book.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
Yeah. Now listen to me. Listen, you get to keep that book whether or not you sign up for Audible. You got to put in your information. You download the book. You listen to it, you like it, you keep it forever. You don't want it. You don't want Audible. You just cancel and you get charged $0.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Here's why they're doing this. Because they know they're crack dealers. You download this book. You go out and you get to listen to a book. I have ADHD. I've been clinically diagnosed with ADHD. I can't go through my regular life without having something else going on. I can't even remember a time when I didn't have earphones in constantly. If I had to deal with my wife and kids without an audiobook running in the background, I would have murdered them all and then myself. Audible saves lives, ladies and gentlemen.
If only Chris Benoit.
Oh, no, Vinny, no.
Had Audible.
All right, now I'm offended. I'm writing a letter to this podcast. So that's what I'm trying to tell you, is that you go out, you download the book, you listen to it. They know that you're going to love it. They know that you're going to listen to it for, you know, you are going to get involved. I started with the gold account. I upgraded to the platinum account. Here's the book I think you should download, because we were talking about satire. Stephen Colbert's got a new book out right now. And actually, let me bring it up because I want to get the name exactly right. Let me go to Audible right now. And all I have to do is put in the letter A. And right after Anal Asians, Audible pops up on my, I have it in my cart. Yeah, right here. Because I'm downloading it tonight. It's called America Again, Rebecoming the Greatness We Never Weren't by Stephen Colbert. It's a 3-hour audiobook. It's not a super long one. A lot of them go 24, 25, 26 hours. You download this one. You can listen to it at regular speed. Vinny, do you have on your Android the ability to double speed the books?
Maybe.
See, I have on my hipster iPhone, which is super cool, what all the kids use. You can double speed the books. And what the iPhone will do is it'll actually readjust the tone so that you can listen to double speed, but it doesn't sound like Mickey Mouse. It doesn't sound like
it's more like the Micro Machine Guy.
Yeah, it sounds like the Micro Machine Guy. Exactly right. Because the brain, they've done research on this, Vin. The brain can actually process much quicker than people talk.
So with it, you can read 50, 60 books a day.
Well, not that fast. For instance, I downloaded Mike Medavoy's book. He's a studio head, and he wrote a memoir. It's a 24-hour book. It's a 12-hour book. Two sets of 6 hours. And I blew through it in 6 hours at high speed. So that's why I have to have the Platinum account, because I blow through these books. And it sounds silly. I know my wife can't listen to it at that speed. She has to listen to it at the regular speed. I listen to it at double speed because I can blow through probably 4 or 5 books a month. And while I'm doing chores and around the house, and I'm learning at the same time. I do all nonfiction or comedy books. And I know I'm doing an extra long commercial here, but here's the thing. I've tasted the dog food.
Sorry, we're being very funny during this.
I've gone down the rabbit hole, Vinny. And you have to go to Audible. If you don't go to Audible and you put in clickclack.com and you start down this path, you, sir, are an ignorant fool. And you will be a person that will get mad at Vinny when he shares wonderful satire. So you want to learn about satire, download Stephen Colbert's book. Man's a master at satire. He's a master at using irony to make his point. And if you are one of Vinny's coworkers, God damn it, download this book and understand that it's possible to be funny using words that don't sound funny, but that ultimately aren't offensive because they're saying the opposite of what those words mean. Right?
Oh, I'm confused.
Yeah, well, you're pretty high right now, so I don't think that... I don't think you... I think you were confused through the whole podcast. All right, so that's Audible. Go download the book. Don't be silly. Now's the time to do it. And, put in clickclack.com. And as always, go to clickclack.com for the best in pop culture updates. And you can find us at hungrytrolls.com, www.hungrytrolls.com, or www.facebook.com/hungrytrolls. Or you can find Vin Nardiello at www.twitter.com/VinnyNardiello, or me, Jay Black. I'm everywhere. Go to jblack.tv, and it's got all my links. And like I said, we're sponsored now, so that means the podcast is growing, and it's your responsibility to spread the word.
Did you go and brag to your wife that, like, you know, you didn't believe in me?
But yeah, I did. And it meant nothing to her.
Oh.
She actually printed out a copy of our contract from Audible, put it on the floor, squatted and shat on it.
Oh no.
And I said, oh my God, that's a pretty bold initiative. Why not just say you didn't like the idea of me doing the podcast? And she wasn't even done shitting. She continued to shit.
And then she yelled at you for not cleaning.
And then just like Carlo Rizzi, Talia Shire's husband in The Godfather, she said, now clean it up!
You spoiled guinea brat.
All right, the sleeping pills have kicked in. You've been listening to Click.
Clack. Hungry Troll.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.